Do 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 wah 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 wah
Wow. Doctor
wah wah da da
Who.
da da.
Doctor Who.
Well, it's not as it would have been funnier if you hadn't joined in. When you join in, now we just both look lame. I was trying to do it to annoy you and
No,
be
no.
all
If I've
ironical
learned
and stuff
anything
and
from Pitch Perfect, it's that when someone starts to lay down a beat, you have to do the a cappella vocal on top of it.
is that what you learned from Pitch Perfect?
It is.
You're wrong with Ian and Bobby. You're wrong.
How you doing this morning, man? Well, not this
Doing
morning
good.
anymore, I guess.
Yeah, no, it's the afternoon. Just relaxing. I have a glass of chocolate wine. We're good. We're good.
Chocolate wine?
It's terrible. Don't ever buy it.
That sounds not great.
Yeah, I saw it at Cost Plus and went, that sounds interesting. And then, now I just killed it, this bottle of chocolate wine, but it took me
I'm sure
a
it's
very long time.
interesting. I don't know if interesting is always a good thing.
You know, I'm not even gonna say it's interesting. It's about as interesting as if you took like a very cheap red wine blend and then pumped a bunch of pumps of like Torani chocolate syrup into it.
Okay,
It's
okay.
like that.
A lot of the chocolate flavored alcoholic beverage I've tried in my life mostly just tastes like Tootsie Rolls. They have like
Oh,
the
perfect. That's
yeah.
exactly what it tastes
Okay.
like.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. Well, good morning. What are we gonna jump right into it this time? Do we want to talk a little bit about our week? I think I asked the same question last time, so.
Yeah, I don't know why you asked it again, because the
Yeah,
answer is
sorry.
always like, yeah, why don't we talk about our week? Unless
Okay.
you had nothing going on this week.
Not much. I'm doing one very embarrassing thing that I, hesitate to even say on the podcast, which is I decided to start rewatching Dragon Ball Z from the beginning and live tweeting it. That's been fun so far.
Are you at the season with Emmy Rossum yet?
Yeah, what is? I don't even get that joke. Bobby tweeted me this morning, "Are you at the season with Emmy Rossum yet?" What show has Emmy Rossum for only one season that you're even referencing?
Man, it's not funny if I have to explain the joke.
Yeah, no, it
I
wasn't
figured
funny
you
anyway,
would,
but.
if anyone, you, the person who watched the Dragon Ball Evolution movie with me, would be the one to get that joke.
Oh, is that who she is in that?
She's Bulma.
I almost have. I have almost no memory of that movie, except for the fact. Okay, you know what's really weird? I didn't realize she was Bulma, but now my mind is blown because Goku is the other guy from Shameless.
Justin Chatwin.
Yeah, so they must have been good old friends already from their Dragon Ball Evolution days before they started doing Shameless together.
Justin Chatwin was also in an episode of Doctor Who.
Really?
Yeah, one of the Christmas specials.
Oh, is he British? He's not
Nope.
British. Okay,
Nope.
that's weird and interesting. Okay, well, that was a super unrelatable introduction. But yeah, that's yeah, I'm watching Dragon Ball Z. That show is like way cuter than I remember. It's very sweet. It's fun. I like it. I'm saying that in a good way. All I remember is like spiky hair, Super Saiyan transformations, and people punching each other for 3 episodes in a row.
I mean, it is that though, yeah.
That hasn't happened yet. I'm 16 episodes into the first season. There was like one fight with the first Saiyan guy who showed up, but Vegeta hasn't shown up. I think after Vegeta shows,
That's
it'll be a little
the
different.
first season is the Saiyans arriving to Earth, right?
Yeah. And I always, I mean, it feels a lot more like Dragon Ball than I remember. Anyway, this is Anime Corner.
Yeah, I mean, this is like basic anime corner. I'm not that's not like me saying an entry level, like the,
Well,
I'm not a gatekeeper of anime, but
well, so I've been on an anime kick lately. Here's what precipitated this discussion or this idea. I've been on an anime kick lately. I got really into My Hero Academia, which is an awesome show that Bobby should totally watch. I caught up on Attack on Titan finally. There was something else too that I just I rewatched One Punch Man, and I just was looking for some good anime, and I remembered that I haven't seen that show since I was 15, and I used to love it. I was curious to see if I still would, and turns out I do. It's really good. So,
So are we gonna get Jump Force and play each other then?
yeah, definitely. What is, I don't know, wait, what's Jump Force? Oh, is that the Shoujin Jump, like, Smash Brothers game with all the
Yeah.
different, yeah. Yeah, we should. That'd be awesome. I'll get all into One Piece, too, and then I'll be caught up.
I don't know what One Piece is.
It's like a pirate anime. The guy's really skinny and wears a round hat. He's on the cover of that game.
Oh, yeah, I do know who One Piece
Okay.
is. I didn't know that was his name.
I mean, I don't think that's his name. I think that's the anime's name. I don't know his name.
Is it called that because he just has one dick?
There's like I actually haven't watched it because I tend to avoid I prefer dubs over subtitles.
Well,
But
la-dee-da.
no, that's the opposite. That's like the if you're a true fan, you're
Oh,
supposed to
no. I thought you
support the
said you prefer
subtitles.
subs than
No,
dubs.
no, no. Everybody always like my friend who is Japanese has been shaming me for 20 years about this, and I have to very calmly explain. Yeah, but you understand the other language, and I don't. So I'm sure they do a better job at voice acting, but it doesn't matter to me if I don't know what they're saying. So, yeah.
I recently, meaning like 2 weeks ago, a local art theater was playing Princess Mononoke
Sure.
and My Neighbor Totoro all weekend, and so my buddy and I went to see My Neighbor Totoro, and we had a lengthy conversation about subs versus dubs, and I think with like all of the Miyazaki movies that I've seen. I've seen both the subbed and dubbed versions, because Pixar was handling the distribution of
That's right. That's
the
right.
Miyazaki
Yeah.
movies for a while, and
Yeah.
so there's some really good dubs for them.
Yes, there is. There's a lot of big voice actors doing them too. There's some weird ones where, like I believe in Howl's Moving Castle, they expanded Calcifer's role to give Billy Crystal more of a presence in the film as the magical fire.
Yeah, I don't remember that movie. I barely remember Howl's Moving Castle.
Well, no surprise. I bring up anime, and Bobby's such a hipster, he immediately jumps to Miyazaki because that's all he
That's all I
likes.
know. I'm not a.
Yeah,
That's not a hipster thing. That's again. That's like holding a Starbucks caramel macchiato and going like,
I
"I'm a coffee connoisseur." It's like, no, I like
Well,
the
no, I
thing that
don't think it's
everyone's
like
seeing.
that because I think Miyazaki is so good that he kind of transcends that genre.
Yeah,
I
that's
often
I'm
don't.
agreeing with you. I'm
Yeah,
saying
okay.
that's not like a that almost doesn't count as anime. I mean, like the
No, yeah,
culture of
that's what I
anime because
no,
it's
what
like
I mean is like this is very similar to when I start talking to you about my favorite Batman comic and you're like, "Oh, I read this book by an NPR author recently about Batman. It's very interesting." It's like, "Yeah, that's kind of what I'm talking about, but you're being all smart about it."
we were talking about subs and dubs, and I feel like I brought relevant information into that. The Totoro sub has Dakota Fanning and Elle Fanning and Lea Salonga, and it's very good.
Yes, Elle Fanning before she could like I think she's 4 or 5 when she
She's
did
very
that.
young
She's
in it.
really young because the
It's
character
very
is very
good.
young as well. Yeah, it's cool. I agree. My Neighbor Totoro, if you have not seen it, is an excellent movie. Even if you don't like anime, you should watch that movie.
No, it's perfect.
If you like any Disney movies from the 80s and 90s, you will really enjoy Miyazaki.
There's an interesting thing about My Neighbor Totoro, which again is basically a perfect movie.
Yes, agreed.
There's a scene in it that is culturally weird, I think,
Is it the
for us.
bathtub?
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's a completely innocent scene. It's
Yes.
literally our discomfort with it can be
Yes.
chalked up to cultural differences.
Yes.
Where the two daughters and the dad are all bathing together.
Who are like
But
8 and 4, I would say. Like
yeah,
they're children, yeah.
they're young. But the opening shot of that scene is like an overhead shot, and the dad is like reclined in the bath with his legs spread pretty wide,
Yes, yes, he
and then
is.
the 4-year-old is looking up and her head is blocking his crotch area. And I sort of feel like, culture aside, I'm like, oh, come on. It's just like a really, again, that scene is very innocent, but I'm like, that there that, you didn't have to do that though.
It's also followed by like a very sweet character moment where
Yeah.
he starts like maniacally laughing and screwing with them in the bathtub in a very dad-like way. So you have this like real slingshot series of emotions where you're like, "Whoa, what? What is this? Okay, maybe it's just, oh, that's cute." And then you have to just move on. Yeah,
I think that
I
moment
agree.
is the reason that scene was never removed from English versions of the
I
movie, you know?
think you're probably right. Yes.
Also, did you know when that movie got released, it was a double feature with Grave of the Fireflies?
I don't even know what Grave of the Fireflies is.
Grave of the Fireflies is an incredible anime movie. It's not Miyazaki, but it might be Studio Ghibli.
Okay.
But it's about a brother and sister, like, navigating World War II. And it's really, really, really heartbreakingly sad. Like, it is not a kid's movie. Like, I watched... I watched that movie, and, like, I couldn't breathe. I was crying so hard but after the end of it.
Okay, so for, like, for context, for people who don't know, My Neighbor Totoro is, like, there are stakes to it. I mean, they're, like, a mom is very sick in it. But it is, I mean, I would say it's comparable to something like Aladdin or The Lion King in terms of, like...
Or, like, Pixar movie. Because I wouldn't I wouldn't roll my eyes at someone who left Totoro crying either.
No, but... I think people cry at Disney movies all the time. I mean that as a compliment. I'm just, it's made for children.
Right.
It's for a younger audience. So that's very, very funny.
Like you wouldn't bundle Inside Out with Saving Private Ryan. You
know? Right. Yes. Yeah, I think Americans have a very different understanding of what animation means than our Japanese brethren. Because I think that, like, was it released that way in Japan?
No, in America.
Oh, see, that's what I mean. I feel like we see cartoons and just assume that means it's for 10-year-olds.
Oh, definitely. I think that's like exactly how that happened.
Yeah.
The Grave of the Fireflies is good, man. By the way,
so does it have any kind of like magical anime elements to it, or is it just a straight drama?
It's a straight drama about a brother who is a child taking care of his much younger sister.
Paired with a fairy tale type movie about a family with a dying mother who discover a magical forest deity living in their backyard.
Yes.
So really, really logical things to, you know, pair up together.
Yeah. Instead of meeting a, a forest creature, they meet starvation. So it's good. It's real good. It's a good match.
What about you? What have you been up to lately?
I did an audiobook for a really, really good book. To kind of contribute to the tonal whiplash of this podcast.
Yeah.
One of my I don't want to call it my favorite books, but like a book that I really appreciated and have returned to often is a book called Columbine by Dave Cullen. And it's
so you would say this is your favorite book.
It's not my favorite book.
Okay.
But
from now on, this will be known as the episode where Bobby finally revealed his favorite book is a book called Columbine. Continue.
It is a book. Yeah. I love reading about Columbine. But Dave Cullen wrote this book. It's kind of like a deep dive into the aftermath of Columbine and kind of how, the media culture around Columbine and kind of how the family
is this a new is this a newer book?
It came out probably I want to say 10 years ago.
Okay.
And
honestly, can I ask an embarrassing question? What year did Columbine happen?
I believe it happened in 1999.
Okay, I have no sense of that. I would have guessed before 9/11, and that's all I really had.
It was either 99 or 2000.
I believe we were in junior high, right? So that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, continue. I'm sorry.
He just released. So he's been he's become the mass shooting guy on cable news. Dave Cullen.
Oh, fun. That's a
fun
thing.
Like every time there's a mass shooting, he'll show up on Anderson Cooper, and talk about what to expect in the aftermath of mass shootings. And he just released a book called Parkland about the Parkland kids.
Wow.
But it's really interesting as a follow-up to Columbine, because he mentions in his foreword how being the mass shooting guy has taken a toll on him, and how he, had undiagnosed PTSD from doing, very intensive reporting on Columbine, and he, didn't know that was a thing that could have happened to him.
Yeah,
and so Parkland is a very different book. Like, he doesn't spend any time, really, on the shooting. It's all on the kids in the aftermath, specifically the
It's such a different
the Never
aftermath.
Again kids.
It's so sorry, go ahead.
But no, it's basically about the year that follows the Parkland shooting and the David Hogg and Cameron Caskey and Emma Gonzalez and Jackie Corin, it follows all them, and it's those kids are amazing. My big takeaway from the book is they actually they're more involved in their own movement than I had assumed they were. Like, it is completely them, and yes. They're very special, incredible kids.
I agree. I co-sign. Bobby's trying to trap me in a gotcha question where I where I disavowed the Parkland kids, and I will not do it. Damn it!
Are you? Yeah.
I will say that beyond that, we are in the middle of the stupidest argument about female protagonists I've ever seen in the world right now, and people need to get over that and just enjoy Captain Marvel and have fun when it comes out next week, because I hate everything.
But, you know, I understand. I just wish that we had gotten a Marvel movie before we dove into Carol Danvers, you know?
Because you care so much about Marvel, Captain Marvel.
I read a thing. I don't know if it's true, but I read like a potential spoiler. I read that Marvel in the Captain Marvel movies, or in the Captain Marvel movie that's coming up, might also be like a very dramatic departure from that character.
Well, it looks like he's going to be a bad guy. It looks like he's going to be a Kree soldier who is against her. I mean, I don't know a ton of Captain Marvel because the cosmic 80s are a little bit of a blind spot for me in comic books because they're real, real weird. But I mean, they're all just a bunch of Kree soldiers, and one of them, breaks ranks and starts working with humans. It looks like they're just going to not do that. But I'm just basing that off of the trailers I've seen.
I would have assumed that from the trailers too, but the tidbit I read made me think that that isn't even Marvel. Like,
interesting. Okay, you're talking about Jude Law?
That could be wrong. So
interesting. Well, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun. For those who don't understand what we're talking about, Rotten Tomatoes had to shut down user reviews this week for Captain Marvel, which has not come out and no one has seen. Because a bunch of men's rights activists flooded the website and started posting negative reviews for the movie because they're mad there's a movie with a girl in it.
Can I offer like an opinion that I think might be controversial?
Those guys are right?
Yeah. Yeah. For real. By the way, I'm so excited. let me go back to Rotten Tomatoes in a second. I am so excited. So there's a new Ghostbusters movie coming out.
Yes.
And people are super excited because they think it's a refutation of the female reboot of it.
Right.
But all the reports so far have made it sound like it's not going to be that. It's going to be about a new generation of Ghostbusters who are children, and two of them are boys and two of them are girls.
Yes.
And I cannot wait for that trailer to come out and for it like...
Well, especially because this weird thing happened to Jason Reitman, who I like.
I do too.
And he, like, where this, I guess it was a headline came out that said, what did it say? Everyone got real, like, crazy on both sides. It was a quote
from an interview where he mentioned...
That's right, it was a poll quote.
He mentioned that the focus of this installment was to hand the franchise back to the fans.
Yes, that's right. That's what he said. I saw like 3 days later, and it didn't get anywhere near as much traction because, of course, like people would rather be angry. But he basically put out a tweet that was like, no, 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 no. That's not what I meant. That's not what I meant. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And I just feel really bad for him because like the people who took that poll quote and threw it as a headline knew exactly what they were doing, and then everybody ran to it. You're right. If it's a movie about a bunch of children, then that's, I don't know. Everything about this is really funny to me. People are dumb. The world is stupid.
I
love
Jason Reitman too. Yeah. I also think as someone who is stepping into the director's shoes.
No. That was a huge like whiff of responsibility.
Yeah. You know, just be aware of the weird culture war that formed around Ghostbusters.
But that's the thing, like, it's, I mean, there's so many times lately where I'm like, yeah, the fact that he said something like mildly blank and then a bunch of crazy people on the internet like rallied behind it like it was a battle cry, like, I don't think we get to point at him. And I mean, I get what you're saying too, you're right, but if it wasn't intended that way, then, like, I don't know. That stuff gets so frustrating to me. I think that's why I'm mad at the internet and the world right now, is everyone is just looking for the fight.
Did you hear about the Momo challenge?
Yes, I heard about the Momo challenge.
Have you heard the full... Okay, so the Momo challenge was the story that broke earlier this week.
Yes.
And it's about how on YouTube, children's videos have been they've been embedded with secret messages with, like, instructions on.
I heard it compared to the Shut Up and Dance episode of Black Mirror. Like, there's this weird they're, like, trying to convince children to, like, do these challenging things,
right,
that would have end up hurting them. Like,
yeah. Eventually that culminates in them instructing kids how to kill themselves.
Right.
And so that landed, and there was supreme internet outrage over that, because YouTube's, yes, already just an immensely hateable platform.
Yes.
And then, you know, it's not real. Like, the whole thing is a hoax. It's bullshit.
Well, I mean, I read a really interesting thread the other day by actually an old colleague of mine, that you're 100% right, and that's absolutely what we should be talking about. But also, like, this thread was about how basically, like, the language has now become, well, it's a hoax, like, everything's fine on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. No, that's definitely not true.
And that's definitely not true. So it's, like, becoming this, like, it's positioning, like, hey, there are problems with the YouTube algorithm as part of this, like,
literally the week before this.
Thing that's not true. Yeah. Which is also not right at all, because YouTube is super fucked up right now.
Literally the week before this, there was news that YouTube was perhaps against its, perhaps unaware, of course unaware, it was, yes, home to a bunch of, like, pedophiles,
yes,
who were, like, had developed their own culture and language around, like, children's YouTube videos, which is
really
insidious and gross.
Yes. There was that, there was some YouTube performer in England who was huge, who had just came out that he had, like, a bunch of, scat fetish videos on the internet. And then I mean, honestly, for like a year now we've been talking about the radicalization of the right and YouTube. I mean, it's a problem, man. So anyway, yeah, that's fun. Momo's fun.
YouTube doesn't have like a block feature, or like a not interested feature. It has a thumb,
right,
you know, it has a dislike feature,
right?
But I watch a lot of, it knows me, because, you know, Google owns YouTube.
It really understands you.
But it knows what videos I watch, so
it'll, yeah. No, it just gets you.
It gets me. It totally gets me.
Yeah.
So it knows I watch a lot of videos about Star Wars and video games and video essays. And so there's this one video essay, and all I know is the thumbnail is Admiral Holdo from The Last Jedi rolling her eyes. And then the title is The Last Jedi is a Complete Cinematic Failure. And I'm like, I have no interest in watching this. Like, I want to burn it off the face of the planet. Like, please do not put this in my auto playlist. And so I'm always struggling to stop it, because I'm like, yeah, I don't want to hear some angry nerd rants about how,
right,
Laura Dern ruined Star Wars for him.
Right. Or I will say, I am a fan of comedy, and, you know, there are comedians who I do like who are a little rougher around the edges, like Bill Burr, people like that, who I'll, you know, watch a clip of online, and then all of a sudden be recommended 18 videos about why feminism is horrible. Like, it, you know, Joe Rogan ranting about women being uppity. It's crazy. It's yeah. I don't know. The algorithm is broken. We're definitely breaking new ground by saying all of this.
You know what's weird is that Adam Carolla is, like, kind
still
of like
around.
He's around, but he's also kind of, you know, like a whiny.
Yeah.
Like MRA man baby.
Yes.
And Jimmy Kimmel, I'm not saying Jimmy Kimmel is perfect, but Jimmy Kimmel flew in the opposite direction.
Yeah, it's fascinating, for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I think because, I don't know why that is. I think Adam Carolla wasn't doing satire, and maybe Jimmy Kimmel was. I'm not sure, I don't know. We're talking about The Man Show, obviously, which...
Yeah, no, they're friends,
I don't know,
yeah.
Do people remember that show who weren't born when we were born? I don't know if anybody... I mean, does, like, the average person know that Jimmy Kimmel used to be the host of a show called The Man Show with women called the Juggies, who jumped around on trampolines at the end of it in bikinis? Like, it's crazy.
It is pretty
nuts. It's just so strange to me that there was a time where that was, like, on TV and very popular, and I don't know.
I remember that surfacing when Jimmy Kimmel kind of ended up taking center stage in some, like, national politics.
Part of the conversation? That's interesting.
And conservatives were like, hey, you know, Jimmy Kimmel acts like this ally, but look at the show he used to be on. And I'm like, you know, kind of fair.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I mean, honestly, I don't remember that show. Is it as... Have you watched it recently at all? Is it as fucked up as you would imagine it to be?
I haven't watched it recently, but to be honest, I didn't watch it when it was on either, so yeah. I don't really know.
Yeah. I guess I saw it a little bit. I just watched a lot of Comedy Central, so I just watched what was on. Like, I also watched Prank Yankers and stuff, and that wasn't my favorite show in the world either.
Coming back?
Prank Yankers?
Yep.
I mean, Crank Yankers? Was I saying Prank Yankers? Is it Prank really? Yankers.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. I mean...
Jay and Silent Bob are coming back, too.
Yeah,
And Kenan Thompson... This one's actually good. Kenan Thompson is executive producing a reboot of all that. That's pretty cool.
That actually is kind of cool. That guy just wants to live in sketch comedy for the rest of his life. He wants to just never leave. He's still on Saturday Night Live, right?
He's the longest running cast member of all time.
Yep. All right, well, Bobby.
What are we doing next week, Ian?
Yeah, trying to take over the world. What are we doing this week? Bobby, let's stay in the present, the spectacular
now. It's
not
what are we doing, it is where are we doing, and when are we doing.
And who are we doing. We're going to talk about Doctor Who this week, which, Wait, do you want to start off by, what?
Who are we talking about?
Yeah, exactly. What is your history with the good doctor? I'm curious. I think you might have actually started the show before I did. I got into it only a few years ago.
Well, let me tell you that is not true. You definitely started before I did.
Oh, okay. So what was your first, like, just walk me through your Doctor Who journey.
I started on an episode that, you have previously mentioned is a weird place for people to start, but I actually think it's a perfect place for people to start, which is Bleak, an episode from the David Tennant years with Carey Mulligan.
And it's an excellent episode.
The Doctor is barely in it.
Yes.
But it gives you a good tonal feeling for what the show is and kind of like what the show can do. And I loved it. And my friend Jung gave me a list of episodes to kind of like breeze through in the first couple seasons.
Yeah.
And my girlfriend Laura and I started to watch through his list. And then Laura went, this is stupid. Can we just start from the beginning and go all the way through? And we did.
So you watched Eccleston and Tennant and everything.
I've watched everything. I have not watched the last season of Peter Capaldi. And I have not watched most of...
Jodie Whittaker's
season. But I've watched everything else. I have one David Tennant episode I've never watched, but that's
okay.
It.
Okay. So I, that's so funny, because I did something pretty similar. A friend of mine got me into the show by having me watch Blink. I think it's a great episode. I don't think it's a bad place to start. What I've probably said in the past, it's a weird episode because it kind of takes place in a reboot season a little bit, where... I really like the companion that he's with in that season, Martha, but she's not around for as long, and it's pretty soon after a really, really beloved companion disappeared, so it's just like a weird time in the show. So that is, I think, one of the first episodes written by, oh geez, what's his name? The guy who was the showrunner during the Matt Smith years.
Stephen Moffat.
Thank you. Stephen Moffat, who is, I would say, was the beating heart of that show for a very long time. He was the second showrunner. He took over during the Matt Smith years, but he also wrote a lot of episodes before that. And I have seen very similar lists, probably to what Jung sent you. In fact, I've probably written very similar lists because there's a lot of real weird campy stuff in those early seasons. I love it, but it's definitely not for everyone. You see a lot of, you know, killer robot Santa Clauses and... that type of thing. So
there are, I think if there's a thing about Doctor Who, we should probably talk about
what
Doctor Who is, but what I will say, if there's a staple of Doctor Who, or at least this new iteration of Doctor Who, it's that within every season, the quality can violently fluctuate.
Yes.
That is, it'll give you like one of the greatest
episode to episode, the violent. Yeah. I guess that's what you said. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But what is Doctor Who? How would you summarize Doctor Who?
Yeah. So Doctor Who, I think, was immediately appealing to me because it feels very much like a comic book in that Doctor Who has existed since the 50s. It is a science fiction series about a character who's essentially Willy Wonka with a time machine, who is this very madcap British character who travels throughout all of time and space fixing things. He calls himself the Doctor because he kind of magically accidentally gets drawn to conflict and ends up fixing everything. And in the process, he takes on these people he calls companions, which are humans who go on these adventures with him. And that's basically it. I mean, is there anything else I'm missing that's important?
No, I think that's a good broad outline of,
yeah,
of what the series
and
is.
And I think what I really liked about it from the beginning is there's so much continuity and history to it. It's essentially at this point just a giant sandbox for people to do whatever they really want. And the Doctor himself, I said this last time, and I was kind of joking, but I also kind of wasn't. I really, really, as a hero character, I really, really love his values. He is a character who is driven primarily by love for life and experiences and an anger at fear and hatred and just very, like, basic. I mean, this sounds really basic, but the way it's delivered feels very different than, like, a superhero character. This guy doesn't fight people. He sciences and talks his way out of things and clevers his way out of things, and he never gives up. And it's just, like, it's very cute and fun, and it's a nice heroic message to instill in young people, I think, and I've just always really admired the show for that.
An interesting thing about the Doctor, also, adding on that, and this fluctuates depending on who is running the show and who is playing the Doctor.
Sure.
The Doctor does display all of those characteristics, but there's a certain aloofness to him or her.
Yes.
So whereas he, like, definitely values you know, humanity, and he definitely values goodness. There is kind of often an ignorance of
he's separate from us
on an emotional level, if that makes sense.
I think that's probably why the companions are such an important part of the show, is they're the ones that ground him in understanding of people. But yeah, I will say that I've watched the Jodie Whittaker season recently, and I finished Capaldi, and I went back and kind of restarted the Matt Smith stuff because it's really fun. It doesn't hold up in exactly as high of a quality as I expected it to. The Doctor is very arrogant. It's really interesting how much he kind of ignores, in a way that I don't know is entirely intentionally meant as a bad thing in the Matt Smith years. I think it's meant to be this very charming thing. And I don't know. There's parts of me that kind of don't love Matt Smith these days. I mean, not Matt Smith as a person, but, like, that character, especially 11. After watching the, especially after watching the Jodie Whittaker stuff, it feels a little dated now. It's really interesting to have gone back to it. Did you go back and watch any of those old ones?
I have
in
rewatched
prep for
some
this,
of them.
Or?
I haven't. No, no, not in prep. I've watched almost nothing in prep.
Okay.
So you.
No, that's fine.
You're probably more versed on the details of Doctor Who than I am, but. Okay. What's interesting about the Matt Smith years? Okay, so let's the.
So one thing we should also say for anybody who's not familiar, Doctor Who, every time he gets gravely injured, the kind of alien he is he regenerates. It's this very, like, silly thing, but it gives the show an opportunity to just recast the Doctor as somebody new whenever they feel like it. So every 3 or 4 years, the Doctor has some big grand adventure where he or she gets grievously injured and comes back as a new character. That's why we're talking about all these different versions of the Doctor.
And so since the reboot, There was a reboot in the 90s that they tried to jumpstart with
with a movie, right?
Paul McGann. Yeah, I've actually seen that movie. It's terrible.
I have not seen that movie. I know it's pretty famously hated though among the fan base, correct?
Yeah. The Doctor's great in it, but the movie is awful. It's
what
really
is
bad.
It? What, like, what bad in what way? Is it cheesy or is
it's
it like
cheesy.
Okay.
It feels like they took Doctor Who and then they said, "Let's make like a big bombastic American version of Doctor Who.
I see. Okay, because I was going to say Eric, the thing with Doctor Who is cheesy is part of it. That is baked in. I think that's
it feels cheesy in a 90s American movie sort of way.
Okay, okay.
And it was supposed to jumpstart a series. Eric Roberts plays the Master, who is the Doctor's like arch nemesis.
Yes.
It's bad.
Okay.
Again, Paul McGann is great in it, but whatever. So there's that.
Yes.
But then there was a reboot in the like mid-2000s, right?
I don't even know about that one. Oh, you're talking about the new reboot. Yes, 2005, yeah, like, I believe, is when it started.
And so since then, we've had Christopher Eccleston, who kind of started the reboot.
Yes.
He ran for about a year.
And Russell T. Davies was the first showrunner during all of this, who is, I believe, openly gay man.
Oh, is he?
If I'm wrong about that, I apologize. But I believe that was, I think he was the one who wanted to include a gay or bisexual hero, and that's why he created,
Jack Harkness?
Yeah, the guy from Torchwood.
Torchwood.
Yeah. Let me look this up, because I don't want to be wrong, but keep talking while I do.
So, Christopher Eccleston played the Doctor for a year, and then we got David Tennant, who is, I think, the popular choice for a favorite Doctor.
Yeah.
He ran for 3 years, I think, right?
Rose. Yes, 3 years. Two years with Rose.
Martha for 1
no,
year.
No, you're right, yeah.
And then Donna for
and
1 year.
And then Donna, I'm sorry.
And then showrunners changed, and Moffat took over, and he had Matt Smith for, I would say, a little too long. And then he had Peter Capaldi. And then just recently, the showrunner switched again to Chris Chibnall, and Jodie Whittaker is the first female Doctor. And also...
And there's always a little bit of overlap. So, like, Stephen Moffat was writing during the Russell T. Davies years, Chris Chibnall was writing during the Matt Smith years, etc.
But, and whenever there's a new, it always feels like there's a soft reboot when a Doctor changes, but there's a pretty hard reboot when showrunners change.
Yes.
Like, you might as well build a brick wall between showrunners, but there's kind of like a sliding glass door between Doctors.
Yeah. I definitely watched this show from the beginning, and I really loved it, but the first time around, The Man Who Fell to Earth, the first Matt Smith as the Doctor episode with Amy Pond, was really my Doctor. I agree with you. Mm-hmm. I think the more probably popular favorite is Tennant. But I would say first time around, Amy Pond and Matt Smith were my guys. And it's there's a lot of I think that run of Doctor Who, what I really love about it is it feels very much like a fairy tale. It actually has a little bit of kind of Miyazaki to it. Like it feels the Doctor comes down to Earth, finds this little girl, says he's going to come right back. He's, you know, covered with, he's like, his clothes are all ripped up because he just regenerated into this new Doctor, and he accidentally leaves for like 15 years and comes back again. So the second time when he comes back, the Doctor has to this little girl, who is now an adult person named Amy Pond, become a kind of imaginary friend to him, and then she finds out he's real and they go on these real adventures. So there's a lot more thematic magic to it, I guess is what you would call it, which I love. I think that stuff is really, really fun.
And I think the chemistry between Matt Smith and Karen Gillan, and also with Arthur Darvill, who plays...
Arthur, yeah, and he, at first I would say it's more of a two-hander, but it becomes a trio really quick, which also is kind of one of the first times I've seen that on Doctor Who, is that there's two companions with him.
Yes.
And because something we should talk about that I think is like an elephant in the room with the show, it's a show about this omniscient, all-powerful, really odd man, who keeps bringing young, attractive women on these adventures with him. And he knows everything and they know nothing. And it's just like a very specific dynamic. And one thing that we're jumping ahead. We shouldn't talk about Jodie Whittaker yet.
No.
Yeah, who's your Doctor? Who's your favorite Doctor? Who's your favorite companion? Why? I guess we can just start off with that a little bit.
I think I'm an anomaly. My favorite Doctor is Peter Capaldi, which I didn't think would be a thing when that started.
I really like favorite, Capaldi as well.
My favorite pairing is Capaldi and Clara, because I just think their chemistry is off the wall.
I agree.
And I think that their relationship is very different from all of the other pairings. Like, I yes. think Clara is an equal in a way that the Doctor yeah. doesn't.
Well, she wants to be the Doctor.
Yeah.
So Amy Pond and Rory always kind of use the Doctor as a vacation. And Amy was very strong, but she was also kind of seen as this, like, silly little thing in a lot of ways. That was just, like, I mean, in her arc, she's running away from her adult life. She's running away from her yes. wedding. She leaves with the Doctor the night before her wedding. That's the reveal on what was going to happen the next day after he comes back. And so it's just a different dynamic. But you're right. Clara is... She always catches it when the Doctor lies to her. She never falls for any of his bullshit. She's usually right before he is. It's really interesting.
An asterisk by that, I think the worst pairing in the modern version of Doctor Who is Matt Smith and Clara. I don't think they click at all. And I think Clara...
Interesting.
I think Clara as a character is used more as kind of like a MacGuffin than anything. Like, yeah. I don't think she really comes into her own until Capaldi comes up.
They only have 6 or 7 episodes together, correct? Because she came in mid-season and then he left at the end of that season?
They have... Wow, is it really that? They
have I could be totally wrong. Too. Okay, okay.
But yeah, that sounds about right. But yeah.
The way that Clara... Have you seen how Clara
yes.
dies? Okay. The way Clara dies is one of the saddest... So one of the things that's a real weird... Other elephant in the room about the show is the Doctor regenerates when they want to get a new cast member in, but the companions don't, right? So sometimes they get a happy ending, but usually in order to explain why the Doctor's best friend would just disappear from his life, they kill them in some way. And so, like, when the show goes on long enough, you have this list of like 15 human beings who the Doctor's been like, come on adventures with me and have fun, and they all just keep getting murdered. And then Clara is, like, I think that Clara is interesting because she's a moment where the Doctor kind of maybe got it wrong. He brought somebody along with her who's as ambitious as he is, and she dies because of that. I mean, she makes a decision to save somebody that kills her. It's really kind of interesting.
An interesting thing about how their story ends, Clara and the Doctor,
mm-hmm.
and this is, I'm going to go back to Matt Smith for a second. A thing that I don't love about the Matt Smith era...
Mm-hmm.
is the Doctor's very emotionally shut off.
Yes.
Largely
yes.
because of his past. But he can often be kind of like a brooding little Batman, you know, if that makes sense.
I agree, yeah.
He also
really, like, he puffs his chest out a lot more than I remembered. Yeah. He's a much more aggressive Doctor than I remembered him being. The Doctor is very peaceful, usually, and Stephen Moffat really enjoys making Matt Smith at least specifically be like kind of almost a war criminal in his backstory.
And there's a lot in the Matt Smith era of like, why don't we all worship on the altar of the Doctor's emotional complexity? You know, like, right. why don't we all put our shit aside and cry about how hard it is to be the Doctor? And I think there's certain interesting characters, Cough, River Song, Cough, who kind of get sacrificed on that
totally.
Altar, where you're like, I'd rather see more interesting things about her rather than about how she deals with the Doctor's emotional complexity, if that makes sense.
Well, and the Doctor is supposed to be almost godlike, so his emotional showing his emotional complexity is not easy to do and also be a good writer.
Right. And like, so I think Amy and Rory actually leave on a fantastic note, which is where... Amy puts her foot in she draws a line in the sand and says, this is where I stand. If I'm given the choice between the Doctor, they have a very codependent relationship. And she goes, yes. when I'm given the choice between the Doctor and between my husband, I choose my husband. You know, like, I don't need the Doctor to survive, but you need, you know, he needs her to survive, which is interesting.
Yes.
And I like that she breaks away from that.
Amy saves Rory often, and Rory's big kind of character arc in the series is like, well, who am I if she keeps running off with this guy? And what we see over and over again, and something they do actually really well is they keep making you wonder who she's going to choose. She keeps just choosing Rory, and we keep worrying that she's not going to. It's well done.
Yeah, and their goodbye is beautiful. Like her last episode, the season leading up to that episode is a little not great, but that final episode, even if you step over all the kind of messy plot stuff. When you get to the last 10 minutes of that episode, it is just stellar. It's Doctor Who at its best.
Yeah. I will say something about Matt Smith, just in general. I want to put an asterisk on this whole thing. Because I mean, 5-6 years ago, I was worshipping at the altar of Stephen Moffat.
Me too.
I thought the first 2 or 3 seasons of Sherlock were some of the best television ever produced. And then eventually, I think with Moffat, at least for me, you start seeing the edges a little bit. And you're like, oh, there's a limited bag of tricks that he is pulling from over and over. And if you really look at it from the right angle, Doctor Who and Sherlock are basically the same character. And he really, really enjoys telling everyone that his hero is the smartest person in the room. And everyone, like, it's just there's diminishing returns after a while. However, I think when things get shaken up, he can really bring something new to the table. And I think what you were maybe leading up to, if I can tee you up for it, was the first season with Clara and Capaldi.
Yes. No. And I think Clara and Capaldi is like the anti Doctor Who.
Explain what you mean. I think I understand what you mean. But
I think Clara, more than any other companion, refuses to worship at the altar of the Doctor.
Like, absolutely.
I think they are on equal terms, not in terms of their not in terms of their abilities per se, but in terms of like their independence and their willpower, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
And obviously
she is really driven. I mean, her introduction to the series is that she's a character who like won't let herself die. She just keeps coming back up in the time stream.
Right. And obviously full spoilers.
Yeah, sorry, spoilers on all of this. I mean,
I'll add a spoiler warning.
If you haven't watched this show before, this is probably all going to sound like nonsense to you anyway, so.
But Clara, you know, through her kind of independence and drive, makes a decision that ends in her demise a few episodes before the season ends.
Mm-hmm.
And Capaldi finds a way to sort of save her from that decision that is harmful. That is harmful to the universe.
Yes.
And her immediate reaction is like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, why would you do
that? Why would you take this choice away from me? Like, let myself die, let me die. Yeah, totally.
And that all culminates in a moment where Capaldi, as the Doctor, kind of admits it. Like, he wipes his memory of her because he knows, like, I can't deal with this. You know, like, you know, I you are stronger than me in this sense, and this is a thing I cannot deal with, so right. I'm going to take the easy way out. And her last moments are just really great.
Yeah, I totally agree. The thing I was teeing you up for more, although, was something you've said before, which I'll just maybe say it, and then you can speak on it if you want to. Something that you said once that I really, really agreed with and thought was very astute was that one of the things that makes the first Capaldi season so great is that the entire story is basically told from the companion's point of view for almost the first time.
Yes.
And so we see an outsider's view of what the Doctor is, rather than asking us to just love the Doctor and think his antics are adorable and sweet all the time. And because Capaldi is this kind of angrier, older, maybe a little more closed off man, even though he can have that twinkle in his eye, it worked really well. Seeing the Doctor as maybe kind of a weapon rather than this like cute Willy Wonka character worked really well for me in that season.
Yeah, that's a very, I think I think the idea of
you almost
that
said that's a really
season,
good point, and then you realize
well, no,
that
no,
was your point.
No, my point was that it was recentering it on the companion, which I think the first season with Eccleston and Rose did as well, to a point.
Yeah.
But I think what you said about, you know, it viewing him maybe as a weapon instead of a Willy Wonka character is the astute point that I was clapping my hands at.
Oh, okay.
I also think Capaldi's cool because he starts off kind of like he comes off of like three younger for the Doctor, kind of like more like a more of a dashing version of the Doctor.
Yes,
he's like this crusty old guy, and you think he's going to be crusty old guy Doctor.
Yeah.
But he ends up kind of being cool dad Doctor, if that
makes sense. Yes, he totally he's wild uncle Doctor.
He's
the uncle who like would give you beer when you were 20 and play electric guitar in his garage.
Like, he's constantly playing the electric guitar. He's wearing like a blazer and a t-shirt.
Instead of his Sonic screwdriver, he has Sonic sunglasses right now. And he dresses like a magician, but also makes fun of the fact that he dresses like a magician.
Right. But he's not like
He's not the Fonz. He's not cool. He's just,
I love this about Matt Smith, but, like, Matt Smith was kind of, like, the, he was quirky in that, like, you know, he's, you see him a lot in marketing materials and stuff wearing a fez, because at one point he puts on a fez and goes, fezes are cool, and then just starts wearing a fez, and it's, like, very much kind of a very, like, no, look at me, though, I'm wearing a fez. Fezes are cool.
Isn't it cool that I own a parrot? I'm so interesting when I wear my parrot to the park.
Capaldi is like, yeah, I'm just going to play electric guitar because it's kind of neat, right? You know, like, he's not constantly going, like, look at me, I can play electric guitar. Yes, he's just like, I'm playing electric guitar.
Yes.
I didn't mean to spend the whole time talking about Capaldi.
That's okay. I think something that is worth pointing out about the Matt Smith years, which I think is relevant, is that the show got huge in England right away. I would say it got big in America with Matt Smith. I think that's when it exploded.
I'm not basing that on anything, but I agree.
Well, I'm basing it off of Hot Topic merchandise at the time. Mm-hmm. I think all of a sudden Matt Smith came around, Amy Pond came around, and all of a sudden every Comic-Con that I went to, there was Doctor Who stuff everywhere. By the way, that is not me saying, like, oh, those aren't real fans. I'm just saying, like, there was all of a sudden a lot of money and popularity from America went into that show. And I think it affected the editorial decisions that they were making during the later Matt Smith run. Because there is a lot of, like, well, this is working. Let's just keep throwing weird shit that he's gonna, like, put on at him. Like, eventually he's wearing Stetsons and eating at all-American diners. And, like, the oddities of him just kind of grew and grew until it became this snake almost eating itself a little bit. And then I think they reset slightly with Capaldi. They, like, learn from their mistakes a little bit. Not that I hate anything from the Matt Smith seasons, but I think it does sag under its own weight a little bit after a while.
I think, this is not universally true throughout the series, but I think when you look at the average throughout the series, I think the perfect length of time for a doctor and a companion.
Mm-hmm.
Or the perfect length of time for a tenure for either is 2 years. And
yeah,
I think
I agree.
The perfect length of time for overlap is 1 year. I think there should be a big change.
Oh,
every season.
I don't know if I agree with that. I agree with the first part. I think doctors, when you get into 3 year range, you start to sag a little bit. But I don't know. I love his companions. I do love them. I think
some of them
something
have gotten...
I always loved about children's sci-fi is seeing an alien talk about what makes humans humans. Like, seeing an outsider talk about what makes us us. I think that's a fun thought exercise, and the writers do a good job with it. So I like the way the companions and the doctor interact in a way that's more than just meeting each other and getting to know each other. Does that make sense?
Yes.
What do you think? What are your thoughts on Tennant and Eccleston? We haven't really talked about that early stuff at all.
I like them both.
Yeah.
I think
characterize them as different? Because I think one thing about the show that's really cool is how versatile it is. You get a lot of different tones that you can play around with, and they don't feel contradictory. And I think Smith and those first two feel really different.
You know, it's interesting because I agree, but I think there's less of a gap between Tennant and Smith than there is between any of the other doctors.
That's interesting.
Because I think Tennant and Smith are both kind of like...
Well, as characters, I think I agree with you. I'm talking about the stories that they find themselves in. Because there is a lot more madcap...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
...corniness.
So, like, between Davies and Moffat.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
I definitely think... Well, there's a gigantic leap in production value between the Davies and Moffat.
Now, but that the thing is with that, like, that's not always a good thing for me. I love a lot of those rubber suits in those early seasons, man. There's some fun campiness to that stuff. And it's not all done. I mean, I'm not making fun of it by saying that. I think that's very intentional. They're trying to create a very silly wild, almost, you know, at moments like Pee Wee Herman looking show sometimes, I think.
There's something really, I think the Davies years, there's more, God, I actually don't want to, I mean, like, there is more kind of like Monster of the Week.
Definitely, yeah.
You know, low budge kind of like stories. Yeah. But I want to say, like, there's more kind of like one-off sci-fi story ideas going on, yep, in those. But I also think there's a lot of, there's a lot of continuity stuff between episodes that starts to weigh the Davies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Down, yeah. Yeah.
Toward the end,
and Davies starts just saying like, "Well, I'm just changing time, and everything is, yeah." It's he definitely plays fast and loose with the rules. Although I would not say that rules are really the important thing about Doctor
Who. Well, I wasn't even talking about rules. I'm just talking about, like, by the time you get to Donna, who's a great character with an okay season.
Yes.
There's just so much, like, he can't. Davies refuses to let Rose go. He refuses to let Martha go.
Yeah,
he refuses to let. By the end, like, there's a cute moment where, it's a big deal. It's toward the end of the Tenet tenure where everyone's in the TARDIS, and at the center of the TARDIS is like this this big control console with a bunch of different panels to it. And he has a person on every panel. He's like, look, isn't this cool that, like,
that's right,
there's a person manning every panel? And I'm like, that's neat, but also we've had to keep up with all of these characters who we don't care about anymore. You know, like,
Rose anymore?
I can't tell if that's a loaded question or a joke.
I'm totally kidding. Yeah, no, I 100% get what you mean. Since we're almost at an hour, maybe we should jump into Jodie Whittaker, because I think we should spend a lot of time on that if we can.
Let's do it.
Jodie Whittaker season obviously is most famously being talked about right now because of the gender switch. We have a female doctor now. However, what I mean, and that's great. I think that's a good thing, obviously. But what I want to talk about more is the quality change in the show, because I think the show is trying to do something different for the first time.
Very much so.
It's doing a few things that are very different. For instance, number one, we're no longer calling them companions. They are the Doctor's friends now. Mm-hmm. There is not one, there are three, and none of them are an obvious romantic will-they-won't-they partner for the thousands and millions of years old Doctor, which was a weird thing, yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I would say that was even present in the Clara stuff.
I don't think it was present for Clara and Capaldi, but I think it was definitely there
for Clara
and Smith.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they really, really enjoyed making these companions swoon over Matt Smith.
It's the worst thing about the Davies tenure.
Yeah. You mean the Moffat?
No, I mean Davies. I mean, like, Martha gets ruined because
she I totally
has to
agree.
Be a romantic pairing.
I was just thinking of Amy and Clara, but yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so Bobby, you've seen two episodes of this new season.
I saw the first episode too.
Oh, okay. So our new crew is the Doctor, played by Jodie Whittaker, a young man named Ryan who is black and suffers from, what would you call it? What would you call his condition?
I don't know. I totally forgot.
Yeah, it's he has. I'll just explain. I can edit, or you can edit this down a little bit. He has a coordination issue. It's like dyslexia, but with your body. So he
struggles riding a bike.
Yeah, so he's 17 and he hasn't been able to figure out how to ride a bike yet, for instance. So he has like a mild disability, I would say. And then his mom is married to a guy named Graham. His mom passes away in the pilot. Graham is his step grandpa, and Graham is white. And then this police officer named Yasmin, who is a young Muslim woman, the three of them become the kind of new crew. So there's obviously some issues. I mean, there's already some stuff going on in terms of diversity of ideologies happening on the show that is new. But then also, I think the show is trying to be a lot more educational and a lot mm-hmm. more historically interesting. I mean, there are definitely plenty of episodes where these characters fight people in rubber masks, but what did you think of what you've seen so far? I'm gonna shut up and let you talk for a few minutes.
It's interesting, because the Doctor Who, I mean, the original Doctor Who with, you know, from the 50s or when
yeah,
it was started.
Yeah.
Its goal was to be an educational show. The Doctor right. traveled through time to teach kids about history and stuff.
Right. And it's a, I mean, it was a BBC government funded right. show, right? Yeah. And when it started, for those of you who are not in the know, it was, I mean, it was in a black box theater. They painted trash can. I mean, the reason the Daleks look the way they do is because they used to be trash cans with, you know, stuff glued on them. That the
right.
there was like a $0 budget for that show originally.
And what I find, so I agree. I think the Chibnall Whitaker season, from what I've seen, kind of centers it around like a more. I don't want to say it's a blatantly educational, but it's more like let's drop in on this historical event.
I would say there are. I would say there are definitely scenes and stuff you have not seen because the episodes we watched center entirely around historical events. There are mm-hmm. moments in other episodes where Jodie Whittaker will just take 5 minutes to explain what nuclear fusion is or something. Like, there are straight up, I will say, blatantly educational moments on the newer seasons. Or newer season.
But the two episodes after the first episode, the ones I've seen, one of them mm-hmm. is about Rosa Parks, and then one of them is the one you asked me to watch, which is about India and Pakistan. Which
no fucking kidding. But also, before you start, can I make you tell the story you told me yesterday, or do you not want to admit it?
Oh, at the end of the last episode, Ian said you should watch the episode "Demons of the Punjab," and then I was listening back to the episode. Because I usually give each of our episodes a listen.
I do too.
After the fact. And I started to text Ian immediately. More like, "Demons of the Poon Job." And then as soon as I literally had typed that out into iMessage. And then Bobby on the podcast went, "More like, Secrets of the Poon." And I felt like a very small person.
I enjoyed that quite a lot. Thank you for putting your pride aside and sharing that yeah. with the world. I appreciate it. But so go ahead. I interrupted you again.
But what's interesting is I think, like, yes, a child could watch this and learn something, but I mm-hmm. actually think the educational aspects of both of those are geared more toward adults, if that makes sense.
I agree.
I think it's more, it's contextualizing historical things yeah. in light of current day.
Something else we maybe haven't said yet. Doctor Who is definitely a show that is appropriate for children and is watched by all age groups. I think in terms of like the age group, I would say it's written for like probably 12 to 25 year olds, right? I mean, it's a YA show. Yeah. It's not an adult show.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I dig it a lot. I felt like the Demons of the Punjab episode, which is the stronger of the two.
We can just talk about it for a minute if you want.
It was an episode that really, really, I watched it this morning before recording, and whew, it's good. It's really good. It's like an upper echelon
really
of
is.
Doctor Who episodes.
Yeah.
But it takes the story, which is kind of set against tensions between India and Pakistan in the 40s.
What is this, science fiction?
But it feels like it might just be my very Western perspective. It mm-hmm. felt like it was pointing to Westerners and going like, do you recognize anything here?
Yeah,
like,
I mean, you know? I think it's playing. So something that I... Okay, sorry, I know I'm talking a lot. I just get excited about this. Okay. I think one of the things I love about Doctor Who and its portrayal of people is I always feel that way. I feel that way when we're talking about aliens. And really mm-hmm. what the Doctor is doing, or what Doctor Who is doing, the show, is saying, like, these are issues of life. These are philosophical issues that you will have to reconcile with, and they're important ones, and they're true of all life. So this is a story about people who are told there's now a wall between you, and you're different from each other, and how people react to that, and what makes those the decisions about how you react to that good and bad. Right. In this case, it happens to be about a Muslim and Sikh nation separating. But I think at its core, it's meant to be, yeah, like you said, like an extremely relatable problem, right?
Right.
For the record, we're talking about the partition between India and Pakistan when it was first created in the 40s, 50s, I guess 50s.
And now everything is A-okay between India
and Pakistan. Yes, yes. So. And it's about – so it centers around Yasmin, who is the Muslim police officer in the show, decides she wants to go back and see her family when they're very, very young. And the doctor,
she has a keepsake from her grandma, which is a broken watch, and she doesn't know what it's from, or she doesn't know the story behind it.
Right. You should keep going. I want you to explain it, because I want to hear what your take on the episode is.
Oh, okay. So she goes back in time, meets her grandma, you know, as a woman mm-hmm. in her 20s, who's about to marry, this, you know, Hindu man. She's never heard of in her family. She's like, that's not my grandpa. I don't know what's going on. And she's kind of like, well, we need to stop this wedding.
This isn't
what's supposed to happen. And Graham and the doctor are both kind of like, well, let's see how this plays out. And so you get this story. I mean, you get the sci-fi.
So here, the sci-fi element I think is great. We can put that aside for now and talk about it in a minute if you want, because I think it's
It's irrelevant. I think it's really good, but
yeah, I think it's really cool, but I like that it's actually a red herring to the show, and then what it turns out to be is really kind of beautiful.
Yeah. Oh no. When you find out what's up with it, it hits emotionally. But I mean, so you know, she befriends this. They all kind of befriend this guy who's engaged to her grandma. They befriend her grandma. They're going to be party to this wedding. She knows that her grandma was the first person married in Afghanistan. That's the story she's told. But she,
Not Afghanistan, Pakistan.
Pakistan. Oh, yeah. My God.
No, you're fine. You're fine. We can cut it out.
We find out that her grandma was the first person married in Pakistan. And so, you know, they're party to this wedding. And they realize that this man she's going to marry isn't going to, you know,
he's not going to live.
He's not going to live. Yeah, they find out through plot contrivances that his time is very limited. But so it builds up to this really beautiful moment where they witness this traumatic event in her grandma's life, and the scene where her husband like lays down his life is really beautiful.
Yeah.
Cause you know, it's at the beginning of this big violent event in the history of both these nations.
Yes.
And they kind of position him as among the first, people to die among millions who are going to die. And just
So, can I add something
go
really
for
quick?
It.
Just so the I would say like the main tension of the show or of this episode is the guy who the man who Yasmin's grandma is going to marry is Sikh. Yasmin's grandmother is Muslim, and this guy Prem, his younger brother, who is much younger and did not fight in the war with them. He had another brother who died in the war. Has become very radicalized and is very much bothered by the fact that Yasmin's grandmother is Muslim and feels that Muslims should now be in Pakistan. That's where they belong. That's the new rule. And that's where like a lot of this tension is coming from. And we have this thing building up the whole season or the whole episode where there are these aliens showing up that are this group of very famous assassins that the doctor is just absolutely terrified of. She seems to be taking them really seriously. And it seems like they're killing people in the woods. And then what ends up happening, do you think I should just explain the whole thing? Or should we avoid those kind of spoilers?
I don't think we need to avoid spoilers. Okay.
I think what's really interesting to me about the science fiction stuff and this is you find out that, yes, this is a group that used to be assassins, but their planet was destroyed thousands of years ago. And the people who were off-planet when it happened rebranded themselves as a group of essentially kind of monks that travel around the galaxy and witness the deaths of the forgotten. They watch people die and remember them who will not be remembered by history because their planet was not remembered by history. And we find out that they have not been killing these people in the woods. The brother has. And the episode ends with him calling the, I don't know, the militia that would be, you know, very racist against Muslim people to the to their house. And the now husband goes outside and lays his life down so his wife can escape.
Yeah, and it's beautiful. It's really beautiful.
One of my favorite things about this episode is the episode starts with the grandma in present day showing her daughter this watch that's broken and saying it belonged to my – or no, what did she say? I don't remember exactly what she says, but the daughter says – or the granddaughter says, you know, I can fix this for you. And the grandma says, no, this watch must never be fixed. And the way she says it, and you're watching Doctor Who, you're like, oh, there's a science fiction mystery to this. And then at the end, it turns out, no, it can never be fixed because it broke on their wedding day, and she doesn't want to ever forget that moment. It's frozen in time, and she has it forever. And it's like, everything about the episode plays off of your expectations of what Doctor Who is in really fun ways. I just really loved it.
I was thinking, you know, I've mentioned the number one thing that makes me a sucker.
Mm-hmm.
In narratives as a character who's ideologically pure entering,
sure.
You know, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
A million times. The number two thing for me is, like, I know I've read a lot of writing recently about, like, destiny narratives and how they're kind of bullshit when they're written poorly.
Sure.
But there's something about witnessing, knowing the outcome. But not knowing
the beauty of predestination, right? Like, yeah.
And I think, I mean, Doctor Who often fights the idea of predestination, but I think the beauty of witnessing an event that makes a person,
yes,
you know?
Yes.
Like, that's the thing we, you know, when I think of, like, things that are, that origin stories get wrong a lot of the time. Yeah. You know, like, when I went into Maleficent, for example, I'm like, oh, I want to see what makes Maleficent, like the events that turn Maleficent into Maleficent.
Well, you're talking, I mean, you're talking, yeah, essentially at its core, you're talking about the contrivances of biopic movies where like three famous characters will walk in and tap and like pat the guy on the head and be like, you're going to be the next one. Like that kind of stuff that never really happens to anybody because we all know what the final act is.
Right.
Is that kind of what you're saying?
No, I was going to say like, I was going in a less relevant tangent, I guess. I was going to say, okay. Like, you know, I went into Maleficent going, like, I'm excited to see the thing that turns Maleficent into Maleficent, and then I got a movie about how Maleficent has secretly been good the whole time.
But then,
when you watch, like, Dr. Horrible, you know he's bad, but then seeing the moment that turns him...
truly bad?
It's interesting. And so, like, you know where Yasmin's grandma is... and you're on this train that's moving toward this event that is going to fundamentally turn her into the person she is in present day.
Yes, yes.
And I really dig that, and I really respond to that kind of thing. And Doctor Who does that a lot and does it well.
One of my favorite things about this episode is the way it ends, which is Yasmin goes back to the present. She sits down with her grandma, and her grandma... in conversation because they're having this kind of serious moment, and her grandma doesn't know it's her, right? Like that's you know, her grandma doesn't know she time travels or she doesn't know any of this. And her grandma says, do you want to know the story about the watch? And Yasmin says, no, you can tell me another time, I love you, you know. And but it's this moment of like, yeah, it's not about telling her that you now understand her. It's about, the episode is a reminder that everybody has things that need to be understood about them, and like empathy is important, right? Like, I don't know. It's this really cool moment where it's, you know, what it reminded me of is the moment in Blockers where Ike Barinholtz could have as a character been like, yeah, I knew you were gay the whole time, and that's why I tried to stop this. And he doesn't do that. Instead, he just, like, lets his daughter have the moment she's having. I really loved that about it. It's like, it made it feel educational again, in a way. Like, it felt like a message about how to healthily interact with other people.
It's a story that works on a lot of levels. I mean, yes. It works, like I said, it's educational about, you know, the partition.
Yeah.
It definitely tries to contextualize that into modern day.
Yeah.
It's also a story about, you know, our old people, older people, our grandparents and their legacies and, you know,
well, it's a reminder that everyone has life experiences, and we live in a world where that's really easy to forget. You get super pissed at the jackass who cuts you off on the freeway, and it's like, you know, something my mom said as a kid that I never forgot was, I had a brother who was sick my whole childhood, and she always says, I don't know where they're going. I don't know why they're in a hurry. It could be a good reason. And that's true, but it's so easy to forget that in everyday life, that people have reasons for why they are who they are and how they are. I don't know. I liked it. I liked it a lot.
I did too.
Should we talk about the Rosa one, which I know is a little less strong, although I like it a lot. There are definitely some odder elements to it.
The Rosa one's good. It doesn't fuck up, which was my biggest fear.
Yes, it does not. I would agree with that. I don't think it does either. I think I actually might even like it a little more than you, although it is, it's. I would say mildly flawed.
where I said in the last one, I enjoy being on that train cart that's moving toward a moment, a destined moment in history.
Right.
There's a whole sequence of events where, like, the team splits up to make sure that the specific bus driver and Rosa Parks end up on the bus on the day they're supposed to in history, so that this event can happen.
So that this, like, racist thing can happen. Come on.
But there is kind of, it does test its characters in interesting ways. Like,
it definitely does.
Yeah.
It also does something that I think is absolutely relevant, because Doctor Who is not a show that openly deals with this stuff directly. Instead, it usually deals with social issues through metaphor. Like, if it's going to be an episode about racism, they're going to have two, like, a green-skinned alien race and a purple-skinned alien race who are fighting a war, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in this episode, the bad guy is a time-traveling white supremacist who wants to stop Rosa Parks from happening, which is very direct and very different than what Doctor Who has done in the past. And I think that is relevant and worth pointing out.
Yeah.
It's cheesy,
but it's good.
No, but they also do it. They walk a, like, it's not, that sounds stupid, but what he's like, he just says, like, things, he just keeps saying, this is where things went wrong. He doesn't say, like, oh, stupid black people, I hate black people. He just keeps saying, like, here's where it went wrong. And it feels like alt-right rhetoric. I get what you're saying about cheesiness, but I think they're making intelligent choices in the show for really good reasons.
Yeah.
But you're right. It also does end with, like, what was the song you said starts playing dramatically over
the
over Rosa Parks being told to get off the bus?
Okay, I want to, just to rewind a second, I think the easy mistake that this episode could have made, and really it's such a low bar to clear, but I'm not convinced every iteration of the Doctor would have cleared it.
I agree.
Which is that that Rosa Parks needed to make the decision herself.
She needed
to not be talked into it by the Doctor, and the Doctor acknowledges this and sits back. The big moment is everyone having to deal with sitting back and watching Rosa Parks, you know.
Which, that is the moment where I'm like, well, wait, what are you saying with this? Are you, like, I'm watching a show where my heroes are sitting down and letting racism happen so history can happen the way it's supposed to? Like, that's a weird message it's hard to get through that message. But I agree with you. I don't think the episode does anything to disrespect the history or memory of Rosa Parks in any way.
But, yeah, there is a moment where the racist bus driver gets off the bus to call the police. The camera does a slow pan on Rosa Parks' face, and then Rise Up by Andra Day starts to play, and I'm like, oh no, just because Doctor Who isn't above cheese or anything, but it's definitely not the show that, like, does modern music cues.
Right. Yes, I agree.
It almost pushes it into, like, you know, like an afternoon special kind of thing.
Yes.
You know, like, yes. You're like, no.
Which the show does feel that way sometimes in this new season because of those educational aspects, but usually not in a bad way. Yeah, I agree with you.
With our time left, we haven't really talked about Jodie Whittaker as the Doctor and, like,
yeah,
how she's different from the other Doctors.
What, you want to go first?
From my limited time spent with Jodie Whittaker, she's definitely quirky.
Yes.
But she feels,
she's a lot more emotionally grounded, for sure.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. It feels weird to say, because it feels loaded, because she's the first woman Doctor.
Yeah.
She feels more compassionate, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm going to say a couple other things that I get why you think that's loaded, but I think they're making these choices very intentionally, so I don't think it is. One of the things that happens in the first three episodes a couple of times, to the point where I was like, oh, they're saying something here on purpose, is Jodie Whittaker keeps being shown that she's wrong about something, and she just accepts it and moves on. Whereas in the Matt Smith, Stephen Moffat writing, not only would that not have happened, what would have happened instead is, like, there would have been this tension that maybe the Doctor was wrong the whole time, and then the big reveal at the end was, no, he's 18 steps ahead of everybody, and he's perfectly right. And there is an arrogance built into that that we touched on at the beginning of the episode, which is troubling, especially with a female sidekick following you around doing everything you say. And in this, it does feel more like an ensemble show. She is the one who knows stuff about the universe, but she's not... She doesn't try to be an expert on the she doesn't step in and give a giant speech to the Sikh and Muslim people who are fighting each other about how they're being stupid. You know what I mean? Like, there's no, there's less mansplaining is what I would characterize it as. That sounds so stupid, but I don't know how else to say it.
No, I agree. I think that's a crucial difference. And
that's
very different from all iterations of the Doctor.
Yes, agree.
Yeah.
Is that what you were going to kind of say? Did I just say the same thing? Okay.
No, yeah, I agree. I think there's less ego to her.
Yes. I guess that's what it is. But, and it's, when I say she's wrong, like, I told a couple people that who hadn't seen the new season yet, and they rolled their eyes. They're like, oh, I don't want her to be wrong just because she's a woman. That's not what I mean. I mean, like, she will talk to somebody else who also is like, hey, you're doing great, but this, blah, 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 blah. And she can acknowledge, like, oh, I don't know everything about this. I'm gonna, like, I don't know. It's just there's more give to her.
Yeah. If the Doctor was a real person, like a real thing,
yeah,
I think she'd be the one I'd want to hang out with.
Yes, you know? Agreed. The other ones would be infuriating to be around all the time. Yes.
She seems the one who would take care of you best.
Yeah. I would hang out with Tennant. I would definitely have fun hanging out with Tennant. I think rewatching Smith, I'm like, yeah, you're a know-it-all. I don't like you.
Smith's a mess,
which is so heartbreaking because, like I said, Smith is my Doctor more than any other group. I mean, that's my formative Doctor Who experience. But yeah,
I think we as the final. Oh, actually, I want to say one more thing.
Sure.
The tone with Chibnall feels a little more. That he has a new person doing music, which is very obvious right away.
Yeah.
I don't want to say the tone is more melancholy, but it's definitely more intimate, if that makes sense.
Yes, it's not as madcap. Yeah. I think is a big part of it. We are not enjoying Jodie Whittaker because she's wearing fezes, although she does that stuff and it's cute when she does, but, like, that's not the point. She's not just a collection of interesting quirks. She's a human being, and so are all the other three people on this crew.
Well, then she's a Time Lord.
You know what I mean.
She's not a human being, she's a Time Lord.
Bobby, what are we talking about next time?
I was going to say, the last thing we should talk about is rating the Doctor's fashions, because they're
fashions?
All very distinct.
I mean, if I was going to wear the fashion of any one Doctor, it would be Tennant, for sure. That's the one I could pull off the best.
Tennant, I think, is the most iconic.
Yeah, definitely visually, he's the most recognizable, I think. I like Jodie Whittaker a lot. I like the suspenders.
I was going to say, I like her getup. It's cool.
Yeah, I do too. I really dig Capaldi also, especially at the beginning with that red under.
I want to look like Capaldi. I think. Like Capaldi really pulls. I guess what we're saying
The red lining on this. You know who I thought was so super fucking boring to the point I don't even remember what he wore was Eccleston. Yeah. Did he wear a leather jacket? I think
he just wore a leather jacket.
Yeah, that's so dumb.
Give the guy a scarf.
But, I liked Eccleston too. Eccleston, I didn't love the first time I watched it, and somebody pointed it out to me somebody said Eccleston was actually their favorite because he felt the most like an alien, and I totally get that. Rewatching it, he's so strange. The rest feel a lot more human, but I don't know.
I think that's a good description because I think Eccleston weirdly gets branded as like the edgy one, and I don't think he is, but I think he is the most alien one.
Yes, yeah.
Also, when you watch the 50th anniversary special or whatever it was, you've seen it, right?
Which one is that? Remind me.
The one with Tennant and Smith.
Yes. It's been a while. It's been like 2 years.
It is very clear that the doctor we never knew about, played by John Hurt, in that, I think it's very clear when you watch it. The first draft of that was Eccleston instead of.
I agree. I totally agree. Which apparently he was not interested in, but yeah. Well,
that being said, John Hurt, it was great.
Oh yeah, that's a great episode. By the way, something to be warned about if you're listening to this and have never watched Doctor Who and you're like, this sounds great, I want to check it out. Doctor Who has a fun thing it does that's also really annoying because it's burned me a few times, where they have Christmas specials that are almost never put into the same area of streaming services as their episodes, and so oftentimes I'll start a new season and be totally lost and then realize I skipped a Christmas special.
Did you see the Christmas special with Justin Chatwin?
No, I don't think I did, actually. I don't know if I remember it. So
it's a Capaldi one. It's a superhero one. He's a superhero in
New York. Definitely don't know this. That's amazing. I need to find that now. Okay, cool. That sounds great. Now I have something new to watch today,
I guess so.
What are we doing next time? Did we talk about it yet?
We did. We talked about it a little bit.
Oh, yes. Sorry, I'm looking at the book right now.
We're going to hash out a thing right now. Because I have two alternate ideas.
Okay.
So I'm going to let you pick. I'm not doing the code word thing. I'm going to lay out three options and then just you can pick.
Oh, this is interesting. Okay.
This might be a stupid idea and we might never do this again.
Okay.
We had originally talked about doing the music of Hamilton.
Yes.
Which I've wanted to do for a while.
Yes.
I'm starting to like back out of it a little bit because I'm like, I don't want to just gush about Hamilton for an hour.
Well, and I think the problem is I have not seen it. You've seen it twice and I've listened to the music a little bit and you've probably listened to the soundtrack 300 times. So
yeah,
I will be coming in at a much lower level of understanding than you, even if I, you know, Bobby very nicely lent me his Hamilton stuff, but
it's called the Hamiltome by a true friends of Hamilton.
Oh my God. Is it really called that? That's kind of great.
Yeah. Okay. But we could do Hamilton. I think it would be good. I think it would be an easy.
I am not opposed to it at all. I want to know Hamilton better than I do. The main reason I haven't heard a lot of the music is I want to see the show, and I don't want to be ruined. But everybody keeps telling me the music's so dense, I should listen to it in advance anyway.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
I don't agree with that for every musical, but I agree with that for Hamilton.
Yeah.
My second idea was, there is a video game that I keep getting about halfway through and stop playing.
Is it The Last of Us?
But it seems pretty good, and it doesn't seem to be very long. And I think if we played through it together and talked about it on an episode, it might be fun.
What's the game?
And the game is Undertale.
Yeah, I'd be down for that.
So it's on the Switch. It's like $10.
Okay.
So we could do that. And then my third option was, I recently watched a television series that is pretty short, but skyrocketed to like one of my favorite TV series of all time.
Uh-huh.
And I know if you watched like the first couple episodes, which is Russian Doll on Netflix.
Yes. Okay.
And so,
Bobby, I'm going to do something right now that's going to blow your mind. Are you ready?
Yeah.
I want you to pick from those three.
I don't want to.
No,
nope, really,
you have to do it. I refuse.
Why don't you knock one of them out and then I'll pick one?
Let's hold off on Russian Doll. Let's do that later because I don't want to feel rushed and I want to watch that show. So let's just do that at a future date once we've both watched the whole season.
Let's do Undertale.
Okay, sounds great.
Okay,
All right. Cool. And we can always put Hamilton in the back pocket for later. But yeah.
Yeah.
How, what, when you say fairly short, what does that mean? Is that 5 hours or 20 hours or?
I believe it would probably be between 5 to 10 hours.
Cool. Yeah. That's that sounds great.
Yeah. Okay. Just to describe Undertale really quickly. It's an indie RPG. Mm-hmm. People, the kids all seem to really love it.
Yeah.
But the, and it kind of takes a, it seems like it takes from like a design perspective, it takes a cue from like Earthbound a little bit.
Okay. Don't talk about Earthbound like you know it as well as I do, Bobby.
You don't, I mean, you don't have a party, you're just one person.
Right.
But the big conceit of the game is you can play the game as, you know, you typically would and be a genocidal maniac and kill all the enemies who attack you.
Right.
Or you can try to reason your way out of battles and let everyone live.
Okay.
So, or do a mix of both. So,
I see.
It's kind of interesting. It seems like a good game. I just end up wandering away from
it. So it's an answer to the Uncharted's of the world.
It is.
Yeah.
It's whatever the opposite of the Uncharted's is.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Yeah. That sounds great. I'm looking forward to it. Well, thank you, Bobby. That was very nice. I hope people are liking this new format where we just gush about something we like for an hour. But we'll see.
Jesus. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. All right, man. I'll talk to you next time.
Until then, remember to keep your... All right. I'll talk to you later.
Feet on the ground and your eyes on the sky.
No, that's what I was going to say. I've been, the last couple times, I've just been looking at items in the room and I was going to say, keep your aerosol usage to a minimum. And then I'm like, I'm trying way too hard. Like, that's not funny.
I mean, Bobby, we're making a podcast for like 12 people. We're already trying way too hard. It's fine.
I had to, I explained to a friend recently what a podcast was.
That's a fascinating thing that I want to know more about, but continue.
And, cause she was like, well, what's a podcast? And I'm like, oh, it's just kind of like an internet radio show, I guess. And then she's like, oh, I want to listen to your podcast. And then immediately I'm like, duh.
Yeah.
But it's like not, I mean that you can, if you want.
My aunt and uncle asked my mom what it was called, and she texted me and asked because she didn't remember, and I texted her back, it's called this, but they're not going to like it. And then she called me the next day and was like, you swear a lot on that show, apparently. They're kind of mad at you, and I just started laughing.
Angela, my sister, has very long commutes and has started listening to podcasts, and I remember...
If she ever starts listening to ours, I'm going to kill myself, by the way.
She listened to our first episode,
oh, God.
And she's like, I started listening to it, and then I'm like, oh, yeah, and she goes, yeah, no, I stopped. It took you guys way too long to get to the point.
Yeah, that's what everybody says. A lot of people listen to the first one and are like, it's sweet that you guys knew each other in high school. I don't know if I care about the other stuff.
Aw. I'm blushing. Like it is. It's sweet that we knew each other.
I don't know. So that's what I kept seeing. Well, I believe for that first episode, we just talked about high school stories about ourselves for 20 minutes. So that's probably what it was in reference to.
Do you think Mrs. Potts listens to our podcast?
God, again, I will kill myself. all right, man, this was awesome. Thank you for a good episode. I'll talk to you next time.
And remember to keep your shoes on your
hands.
Bye.
And we'll rise up. I like the waves. We'll rise up. In spite of the ache, we'll rise up. And we'll do it 1,000 times again. You're